My name's Stephen Neal, pastor at Alden Bethel Church and blogger at Building Jerusalem.
And my name's Stephen Watkinson, church planter in Rochdale and blogger at Northern Souls.
So we mentioned actually last time in the podcast that Steve's church had grown a little bit. And we were thinking a little bit about COVID and what lots of people are saying about their churches and size. It seems pretty obvious that a lot of places, I don't know if it's fair to say most places, have lost quite a lot of people, possibly because of having older congregations, possibly because of having less committed people who've lost the habit or something like that. And we were just interested in thinking, Alden Bethel's grown a bit. We've grown a bit at in Rochdale Evangelical. And we're just interested to go, what are some of the dynamics behind that? Steve, why do you think, I had a couple of interesting questions. Do you think COVID hit you particularly as a church?
I mean, it did on some level. So we have members who died during that period. Now, they didn't necessarily die of COVID, but certainly there were people who were with us before COVID who aren't with us now because they died. There are people who clearly and visibly declined during COVID. So they were active and really engaged members who they're still engaged, but they're just not nearly as active anymore because they can't be. So it's that's affected us. So that those things have definitely happened for sure. At the same time, obviously we've grown since then. Whether the people we've picked up have come in any way because of COVID, I'm not convinced that's true.
Yeah.
So, for example, during COVID, our Iranian ministry was in a bit of a trough. So the years I've been here, there's been a pretty consistent pattern where we might have 10 to 15 Iranians with us, then various of them get their asylum, they all move on, move off. And 2 years later, you might only have two or three Iranians with you. And then a couple of years later, you get a little influx again, and then you're back to 10 to 15 Iranians. And it's just always been that pattern. During COVID, we were in a trough where we didn't really have any. And then shortly after, we had a little influx of them again. So one thing we have now is a group of Iranians coming regularly and looking to join in membership and looking to have involvement in the church that we didn't have during COVID. There's a couple of families who've joined us, really because of our commitment to the word, our commitment to scripture. So there are, I can think of three families, two of whom have come from sort of African health and wealth, Pentecostal backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And have basically wanted to move away from that, wanted something more Christ-centered, more Bible-centered, and felt that we were providing that. There was another family who've come, and they just wanted more focus on the word, more something that I guess a bit deeper in terms of how we look at the word and what we're trying to draw from the word. So that, and yeah, coupled to that, obviously, I think people not only come because that's what they're after, but then they've felt very welcomed when they've come. So I think those two things combined. I think if they hadn't felt welcomed, you know, I think they'd be bothered. But I think there was those things. I think we've had a bit of like begetting like. So sadly, all of our Beijian contingent, bar one, have died. So we had this an elderly set of people from Barbados, several of whom died during COVID or died just before that. And we've only really got one left. And she's not not as active as she once was because there are various issues going on there. So we sort of dwindled down and didn't have so many black people in the congregation. Then all of a sudden, one Cameroonian lady with her two boys comes and is very active and very keen. Really glad to have her. But I suspect that she was there when another Nigerian couple came. They felt, oh, there's someone, at least somebody who looks a bit like me here. And then, you know, another Nigerian family came. So that's another five people who, again, there are some people who look a bit like me there. We've now got, you know, trying to think, two Nigerian couple and a Nigerian family, which between them is seven people. And then another Cameroonian family between them. So we've got 10, you know, quarter of the church now is black African. Then Iranians, similar deal. We had one or two. And then because an Iranian came, so you had one new Iranian guy come. And because there were some other Iranians there and he was welcomed, he said, oh, I'm going to bring my friends, which he did. He then brought six other people with him the following week. So we've now got 10 Iranians. Yeah. You know, so it's a bit of like begetting like there. So we've got quarter of the church is black African, about quarter of the church is Iranian, and the rest is mixed other, I would say. So it's white other, of which you've got white Brits, you've got Americans, you've got Eastern Europeans, and a few different Middle Eastern groups, but they're sort of all ones and twos representing those groups. But yeah, your main three groups, I guess, would be white Brit, black African, and Middle Eastern, mainly Iranian.
Mm. It's a couple of things that are interesting. I think one is it's just there is this element of up and down, isn't there, which is sort of inevitable in the areas that we're in. Partly because it's a funny area, isn't it? So there's a very fixed population who have been here a long time and aren't going anywhere. But there's also quite a mobile population, particularly your asylum seeker type population that is often quite mobile. So you've maybe a couple of years with a particular person or whatever. So you've got a kind of inevitable ebb and flow going on there. That's probably, so I mean, what I'm hearing is that's just distinct from COVID. Like that just happens. But possibly what, possibly just generally in church, I was thinking, so a lot of churches I've been to have been mostly upper end. So kind of retired up, you know, sort of young retired up. And I guess COVID is going to hit you really hard. If that's your, because of what you said about some of your church, that the problem is for those who it's just over a period of time made them less active and all that kind of thing, or like you say, they've died, there's going to have been big issues there. There was something I think about the census saying that the average age of Christians had gone up. Now I know it's like that's a very broad kind of thing, but it is true that quite a lot of churches are going to have been hit disproportionately hard because disproportionately their congregations or memberships or whatever are old.
Yeah, I mean, context-wise, there are other things worth knowing as well. So we've always had a relatively high turnover of people.
Yeah.
So I think since I started in the church, so I've been there, what, since 2013, and people who were in the church before I arrived are now, I think, three couples.
Mm-hmm.
So there's three couples. So six people who were in, and no, that's not true. Eight people, three couples and two individuals I can think of. So less than a quarter of the church now are people who were there before I came to the church 8 years ago. And a significant chunk of the people that we have now only started coming to the church within the last year or two. You know, so we've always had that. There's this been ebb and flow of people coming through the church. They come with great excitement. they're there for a year or two, and then they drift off, or they go, or they leave, or they move on, or you know, there's loads and loads of reasons why. Some are more legitimate than others.
Yeah, makes you good and bad.
But nevertheless, we've always had this turnover of people, and we are not a church full of established old guard folk who have been around for a long time.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's interesting in a way, and that oddly, in terms of coming out of COVID, might have played to some. I mean, I can think of churches in Rochdale for multiple reasons, but that have shut. And I do think part of it was inability to keep going because of an older age range, that then COVID just was the final nail in the coffin kind of thing of the church. Do you think there's something as well? So one of the things, perhaps particularly talking to Anglican friends, there's a tendency, it's not just Anglican church this, but there's a tendency to have what you might describe as a big fringe. So people who...
You don't have a big fringe.
You mean in terms of my hair scenario?
I do. I'm glad you spelt that out in as much as we don't
have... I have a very big fringe. It's just very far back.
It's a very high fringe. Yeah,
very, very high fringe. Yeah. Almost, you're right, there is almost a joining of the back with the fringe.
I almost have a fringe just so I can mock you.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, I obviously appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I it's important. It's often important to me to emphasize, you know, the story with Elisha and the bears. I've repeatedly told my child, I think it's a key Bible story for my children growing up.
My father-in-law used that story once on his son who, when he was very young, because he laughed at something, like an older person in the church, and just came out and basically focused on the bit where, you know, for disrespect, the child was
eaten, you will be mauled by a bear,
and then he just walked off and he didn't explain it or anything. That was just it.
Yeah, I think that's realistic.
Anyway, we were talking about church fringes.
Yeah, we've gone through some dubious biblical interpretation.
And that's how we draw them in, Stephen. Yeah. That's why we're growing.
Yeah, I'm working on a ministry to bald people. So one of the things that I think has really, really hit a lot of those churches is fringe people weren't committed. Now, there's a whole load of how you might think about a fringe. So if you're thinking, well, our church is kind of, we want our church to be welcoming and open to outsiders, so we love it when people come in and hear the gospel and can sit and listen, which is good. There is a real difficulty if you have, I mean, I can think one of the churches I was in, really, there was a kind of core, it was quite big. So Sunday mornings might have been 150, something like that. But I would say the committed people was about 20 to 30. What you would have thought of as your membership. Now, I think COVID to that kind of scenario has probably decimated that kind of setup.
Yeah, I mean, I think we definitely lost some people during COVID who were either very much in that boat. So we have pretty clear membership structures. It, you know, everybody in our church is clear who is a member and who is not, even to the point where if you're not in membership, then you're not taking communion and all sorts. You can't serve or do loads of stuff. There's a clear distinction and divide between the members and the non-members. That being the case, you get two things in our church. So we do have non-members attending. And again, there are reasons as long as your arm and as varied as it gets as to why people do. I think some folks we lost in COVID because they were effectively fringe, who've been encouraged into membership, didn't want to join for whatever reason, and then have drifted. You know, they've suddenly managed to shake the habit of a lifetime, basically. Mm. And that's all it was. It was a habit of coming. and they've managed to shake the habit. I think there may have been reasons underlying why they maintain that habit, but nevertheless, they've shaken it. Now, do I think it's sad that they're not coming to church and, you know, they're less likely to hear the gospel and all of that? Yes, to a degree. Do I lose a great deal of sleep over people who've never wanted to join and never joined your church and aren't a member in your church, leaving your church? Not really. I just think, you know, of course they've departed from us because they were never of us type thing. You know, I think that's what John's talking about, isn't it? So we did lose a few of those, but the majority of our church, actually the majority of people we see on a Sunday would be members. And not least because if people don't attend for quite some time, we remove them from membership. So they cease to be members and they cease to be involved in the life of the church in any way. So the majority of people who are coming are members with a smaller fringe of people. However, what we do is we do have a, how would I put this? There's a core of people who do the majority of the work still. So we have a more active set of members and a less active set of members. Now, again, that's not always a sinister thing.
Yeah. Or, you know, just where there may not be, there may be the will to do it, but not the...
Well, I'll give you, for instance, you've got some Iranian guys who don't have brilliant English. With all the will in the world, they're not going to be leading and preaching in your services. They might be able to do certain things, and with all the will in the world, they're going to find it much harder to turn up to evangelistic things where you're saying, go and chat with the unbelievers coming in. Well, they don't all have the language skills to make it easy to do that. However, they do have the ability to make tea and coffee and to clear up and to put chairs out and to do those types of things. So they often do that type of thing because it's stuff they can readily do and press into. So you've got a bit of that going on. You've got stuff like, we do have some more old elderly members who've quite rightly taken a step back because they're just not as active anymore. It's not they don't want to, it's just they're not able. Most churches will have this. You know, I don't think it's unique to us. I can't remember what your question was now, but...
what I think is quite interesting. So one of the things that I think we've thought about a bit and probably are pressing into is that we want a church of members, basically. Of course, we want people to come in and we don't expect them to become a member the first minute they walk through the door. And of course, we want people to come in who aren't believers, who we don't expect to be members, which is all fine. And we want that. One of the things that I think I look at is some of the... it's easy to get a bit hazy. So we get excited about having good numbers in the church without getting clear about yes, but.
And to be fair, that is not, you said at the start, mainly talking to Anglicans now. This is not unique to Anglicanism.
No, that's right. It's just, I think Anglicanism almost by definition, or Church of England, I should say, by definition has it, because there's this kind of, it's my church, even though, because I live in the parish where I was born in the area.
Absolutely. So their understanding of membership is different, but the way it will work out in your average independent church or Baptist church where they do have membership is one of two ways. Either membership is a bit meaningless. So basically you can become a member and all you really get for that is you get to turn up to members meetings and there's no, apart from that, if you don't join the church, you can still take communion, you can still serve, you can still do stuff. There's just no meaning behind your membership at all. And as a result, it's not that surprising. Quite a lot of people just go, well, why would I bother? I mean, going to a members meeting is not exactly a draw for me and everything else I can do without being a member. So why? There's no value. So that's one way it happens. The other way it happens is it's not that membership's meaningless, but that no one ever really talks about membership. So it's just not on anybody's radar. So again, whilst you may have slightly more meaningful membership, which might mean you can't serve in certain things if you're not a member, they might not be apparent. So for example, you might not be allowed to preach if you're not a member, for example. But if most people aren't going to preach anyway, it's difficult to see an evident distinction there between what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. And if you are allowed to take communion as a non-member, then there's no obvious distinction there. And if no one talks about membership and why it's important and how that's in, and you know, in any way affects the church, then most people, again, aren't going to see a need or even necessarily understand or know that membership's a thing. One of the things we do, or rather two things we do in our church, membership is meaningful. So you cannot serve in ministry in our church, you cannot take communion in our church, you cannot come to members meetings in our church if you're not a member. And so there is a distinction every Sunday between the members and the non-members that is visible and notable. That's one thing. The second thing is that visible, notable difference gives you the opportunity to talk about it. And one of the questions we ask in communion is, are you in membership of a local church? And are you in good standing with other members in your church? Now, that then gives you the opportunity to say, look, membership matters. Membership is a thing that is significant. And it's our experience, if you primarily have people in membership rather than just a group of people turning up, then you are far more likely to keep people because they've got a vested interest in the life of the church.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's interesting. I was thinking of, so there's a church I was a part of, went to, served in a lot, but wasn't a member of for quite a long time, actually, as in sort of 8 or 9 years. Now, there were reasons for that, in that it was a Baptist church. I wasn't a Baptist.
The dodgy Baptist church that lets you serve and take communion and do everything.
Okay. Yes. I mean, I understand that you serve issues. The observation I was going to make was I was committed because I was committed. As in, if someone had had a conversation with me. And actually, that, to be fair, I mean, that grew over time. Initially, it was as a student and I wasn't that committed. I did rock up regularly, but obviously, so someone, if they'd had a conversation, would have found a committed Christian who was committed to going to church. But obviously, there were a lot of people who were in the same situation, who came and went, and sort of came a few times, then you didn't see them for a bit, then they'd come again. If you asked them what their church, you know, thinking of like within the Christian Union, they would have said it was their church, and you're kind of going, but I see you like 3 times a term or something. And in some sense, there's that. I mean, I understand for you, there's a whole set of questions with that. But equally, there's a quite simple question that says, you're not even having the conversation. So it's not on the table about how committed you are. And therefore, you build in potentially quite a lot of uncommitted people who, I mean, obviously you can talk to them about it, but you've built in that you don't. And I do wonder, you know, like I say, thinking about one of my Church of England experiences was that you really, one of the things people talk about is that actually you needed to build in ways of talking to people about where they were actually stood and where they committed and stuff, because it was a bit, actually what COVID exposed was a reality that you were slightly terrified was the case. So you were slightly terrified that the 100 people you were looking out on a Sunday morning or whatever it was, just hundreds easy, you know, that you were looking at, you could probably know in your mind, well, there's the 20 or 30 who do everything. There's the 20 or 30 who we do see quite regularly and they will rock up to stuff a bit. And there's the 30 or 40 who we kind of think are there for a whole set of reasons that we're not very clear about, but we wouldn't be at all surprised to watch that just constantly turn over. And yet I haven't got, you know, I'm kind of looking at it, knowing that that's the case without a mechanism to deal with it. COVID comes along and you lose that 40 people and probably 50% of that 30 who were sort of committed. And suddenly you've gone from looking out at 100 people to looking out at 50,
45.
And I think it's been an issue in churches in general for a long time. I think there's a lot of churches that felt they were healthier than they really were, that COVID exposed in a big way. There's a lot of churches that thought they were healthy because they had a lot of people, or thought they were healthy because there was a lot of people at stuff, when actually the reality of what was going on underneath the surface with those people was quite different. The reasons they were there were not necessarily the reasons people presumed they were there. And I think a lot of that has been exposed in COVID, and a lot of pastors have realized their churches were not nearly as secure and as healthy as they thought they were. I think I don't say this with any great pride particularly, but I do think we've been very clear that if you are going to be part of Bethel Church, you need to become a member. And if you're going to become a member, there are certain responsibilities that will be placed upon you. There are certain things that will be expected of you. And the people who don't want that very quickly go, this isn't the place for me, and go somewhere else. And the people who do want that press into it and say, yes, actually, that is what I'm looking for in a church. I want to commit. I want to make this my family. I want to be fully part of this. And I know if I want that, I can't get that by not becoming a member and by not actually committing. And so I think that's helped us in a big way. There's clarity about who the members are, what members are supposed to do, how membership functions, and all in, I think that's meant that the people we've got have stayed, and we've obviously picked up people since for various reasons. But again, they're on the same page, I think, as to why we do what we do.